I know that you had had cancer. Was there a certain moment where you came closest to giving up?
The story of every entrepreneur, do not give up.
People see your life and they think everything perfect and easy. I mean, we just see this beautiful home. But as you said, you had some down times too. You failed fourth grade, was it?
Fourth grade.
And you had a child at like 14, 15.
14.
And you still became super successful. So you never took any excuses.
If you want to achieve your dreams and you want to have a life better than you could have ever dreamed, you've got to.
Hey, thank you guys for tuning in on this podcast. We're here with Glenn Stearns, the star of Undercover Billionaire. He also runs a mortgage company called Kind Lending here out of Costa Mesa, California. And he also wrote a new book called Integrity, His Slow and Painful Journey to Success. Glenn, thanks for letting us come over and do this
absolutely.
With you. I appreciate it.
Nice to see you again, Shane.
Yeah, so how have things been?
Great. Things are going well, you know. It's tough out there in the mortgage world, but...
Oh, for sure.
You know, hey, anything worth doing... Got to have a little pain to go along with it, you know?
Absolutely. So how long have you been in the mortgage business?
Well, I started in 1988. It came out right out of college, just drove from Maryland to California, and immediately jumped in, didn't know what I was doing, but became a loan officer, and 10 months later started my own company. And it's been a slow and painful, you know, the growth, but it's been a fun ride.
Absolutely. So I know that you had told me some of the challenges you went through from getting your first warehouse lines of credit, and then I know you went through the 2008-2010 crisis and stuff. So what is one of the most challenging things you've been through? Was it the crash in 2008-2010, or?
You know, it's interesting. Well, first let me say, you know, it's funny, when I did the TV show Undercover Billionaire, the hardest part was going from $100 to $1,000, okay? And it's very similar in business. I think the hardest part is getting the momentum. It's getting started. And when I started, I didn't have a lot of experience. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a lot of money, didn't have resources as far as mentors and people to help me. So that beginning step was very difficult because you just don't have the roadmap, you know? And so in the very beginning, you know, we were a broker and we started learning just how to just basically originate loans and, you know, send them off to a lender. And then after a few years thought, well, maybe I could become a lender. So we started to see if I could get a warehouse line. And I went into my bank and I said, I'd like to get $1 million credit line so I could become a banker. And he says, no. And I said, no. Why? I go, aren't we doing really well? And he says, you are, but you're not retaining earnings. And I said, well, what's that? You know, I mean, this is how naive I was, right? And he says, Glenn, you take all the money out of the company. The company really has no value. Right? You have to keep the money in and then you have to grow the company so we see that you actually have some confidence in the company and it's got some of its own net worth. Mm. And I'm like, huh, okay. So the next year I asked him again and he gave me a $6 million credit line because I had retained earnings, right? And that was kind of the beginning step of understanding that you need to really invest in your business and in the future to give other people confidence that they invest in you, you know.
So that was one of your first learning things, is that whenever you start a business, you was taking the money out to kind of live a certain lifestyle, or what was you doing?
Yeah, kind of, you know, I was very naive, and I think right now, a lot of people that have been in business for a long time take for granted that people new coming in don't understand all those little things, like retained earnings, okay? Mm-hmm. It seems so basic, like a steering wheel or a brake or a gas pedal on a car. Mm-hmm. But the reality is when you first get started, you don't know what bankers are looking for and things, you know, like that. So, yeah, learning about, you know, strengthening a company so others will believe in you is a very big first step. And again, while it seems obvious, after 40 years of doing it, it's not very obvious to someone that's just getting started, you know?
Absolutely. So some of those mistakes or things that you have to learn through experience, did you learn that having a good mentor or mentors was very valuable?
It was. However, yes, it was. I didn't know that going in. I got started very differently. I grew up in an alcoholic family, and you know, I was the first to go to college, and so I didn't have my own roadmap to how to build a business or how to surround myself with, say, balcony people versus basement people. I didn't know all that, and so I kind of learned along the way, the hard way, you know. And what I found was, I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. So if I could find some people that had already done it, I didn't know the word mentor. I didn't know what that really meant. But I started looking in the papers and seeing people that were, you know, very successful, had their names on the buildings and were in the philanthropic circles. And I said, I just want to go to lunch and learn. Mm-hmm. And as I started to pick their brains, I started to realize, oh, I need to do this and I need to do that. And then it became kind of an easier road. You know, even though it was extremely difficult, when I look back, it probably could have been even harder had I not learned along the way by some people that were pretty wise, you know.
Absolutely. So what do you recommend for someone to find those good mentors? Do you just find someone in your local area? And how do you know you're not getting someone that's just going to take advantage of you?
Yeah.
What would you look for?
You know, if you're an entrepreneur and you've got a small business going, I would go to a group like EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, or YPO, the Young Entrepreneurs Organization, and I would try to get into these groups of other like-minded business people, because then everybody is trying to build their own business, and then you start giving advice to others, they give advice to you, or at least you give kind of your own story, which people can learn from. And, you know, when you do stuff like that, again, you're able to attract great people that don't have an agenda other than, hey, I'm in it because I want to learn, you're in it because you want to learn, right? But when you're out in the community and you find people, I'm sure there are times when you can run into the wrong people, but when you have to really look at people, and if you see someone that's successful and they've already done it, a lot of times they love to give back by telling their story and by explaining maybe things that they tripped up on so that you wouldn't have to. And you'd be surprised at how many people are willing to help you. And when I say help you, I mean help you by mentoring you and giving you good advice, right? Yeah. It's a lot different than giving you money and financing you. That's a different thing, you know. And in the what I've found, a lot of people come and they say they want to be, they want me to be their mentor, and after a couple times we've talked, then they want to borrow money. And you've got to decide when you start to talk to someone, do you want them to be your mentor or your banker? Because they're very different. And, you know, you shouldn't cross the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned something a second ago, that mentors like to share their story. And I've seen you about 4 or 5 times now. You know, I remember when you and Mindy invited me here, hearing all your stories about how you met one of your mentors on a train. And I'd like you to tell that story in a second, of course. But hearing all your stories just lets me see, number one, that, you know, people see you're alive and they think just everything's perfect and easy. I mean, we just see this beautiful home, just everything's perfect, and that you just always live on the top. But as you said, that you had some down times too.
Right.
And then also just to hear the stories about where you came from. I know you said you failed, fourth grade was it?
Fourth grade.
And you had a child at like 14, 15.
14.
And you still became super successful, so you never took any excuses just to hold you back. All that's very motivating for me and has helped me. So do you mind to tell that story about how you met one of your mentors on a train?
Sure. It was 2001. It was literally the week after 9/11. Right when planes started to fly again, and I wanted to help. I wanted to go to New York and pick up rocks and move them and see if there were still people under there, you know? And so I flew out to Maryland and I took the train up to New York. I had my hard hat, gloves and everything. And I was actually kind of naive because I didn't realize that the National Guard would put a big, huge fence around the whole area and not allow people in. It makes sense because there was, you know, asbestos, there's all kinds of stuff going on that probably wasn't good for the public. So I really didn't get to help like I wanted to. But when I left New York, I got on the train to go back to Maryland, and an old man sat right in front of me, and his wife sat behind him. And I was hoping he wouldn't sit there, because then I thought, I've got to talk to this guy, you know, the 3 hours down to Maryland. And he sat there, so I, you know, I looked down, I saw he had a ring on and I could see the word basketball or something. So I thought maybe he had played in college or who knows, right? So I said, you must like basketball. And he said, I guess you could say so. He said, I own the team. And I said, oh really, what team's that? He said, the Washington Bullets at the time. It was Abe Pollin. And I don't think they changed to the Wizards yet. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But, and I'm going, holy cow. It was the gentleman that owned, you know, again, I was from Maryland, so he owned the basketball and he owned the Capitals, the hockey team. And I'm like, holy cow. I was wishing like anything this man didn't sit in front of me. You know, I was hoping a pretty girl sat there or something, right? I was single. And here is this just wealth of knowledge of, you know, what he had done in his life. And I just sat and picked his brain for hours, you know, and and learned about a lot of important things to him that were important to him. You know, and they were about loyalty. You know, he had people that had worked for him for 40, 50 years, you know. I learned about that when you have something that you develop, you know, don't just turn around and sell it, keep it. Hold it, you know, have, you know, income that comes from some of these, you know, properties. And he just told me so much. And I was just in awe of everything that this man had done, all the good, all the pain, all, you know, everything that went on in his life. And it was an interesting story where he told me one time, he says, now, you know, son, take the Irene. Do you know the Irene? I said, yes, sir, I do. I said, it's a very, probably one of the best apartment buildings out in Washington, D.C. He says, yes, it is. He says, I built that in 1963. He says, it was the best then. It's still the best now. He says, son, you want to know why I named it the Irene? I said, yes, I do. He says, hey, Irene, why don't you meet this kid? It was his wife. Oh, you know? Yeah, and so just to sit, you know, it was wonderful. You never know who you're going to sit next to, you know. And again, I was hoping that he wouldn't sit there, and then look what unfolded, you know. I would have paid $1 million to have that conversation with him.
Oh, absolutely. So going to Undercover Billionaire, can you tell us, can you tell everyone kind of what is Undercover Billionaire and how did it come about?
Sure. You know, I had been, again, growing my mortgage business in about 2003, my wife and I were asked to do a reality TV show. Somebody in my office was a finalist to be on it. They told them about us, they called us, and next thing you know, we're on this show. That was called The Real Gilligan's Island. Silly show. I ended up winning the show. And so for the next 15 years, producers would call me, hey, do you want to do another show? We got this great idea. And I'd always say no. I said, I'm a business guy, I'm not a TV guy. And they just kept calling with new ideas over and over again. And finally, I would start to kind of, you know, throw something back at them. I said, look, I'm not interested. If you're interested in following me around, taking me anywhere in this country with no money, no contacts, you want to see if I can rebuild a business. You want to see if I can do it from scratch. I'm tired of all these people out there saying this is not the land of opportunity. I have been around the world, and this is the best place in the world to be able to grow a business and be an entrepreneur. So if you want to follow me around, I'll go do that. I'll live under a bridge. I'll do whatever it takes. And the guy calls me back. He says, if you're serious, Discovery said they'll do that show.
Wow.
And I went, holy cow. You know, it's kind of the old, you know, dog that catches the car, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What do you do now?
Yeah.
And so there I was going, okay, shoot, I said I'd do it. Now I got to do it, you know? And so, you know, it was really a show about starting from scratch without having deep pockets or great connections. What would you do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hadn't given it a lot of thought. I didn't have a plan in place. I got dropped off and started with nothing. And, you know, it's something that I'm extremely proud of. Not the show. It's a TV show, big deal. I'm proud of the fact that halfway through the show, I had had a couple great friends of mine that were interviewed in the beginning. One was Richard Branson and one was John Elway. Mm-hmm. They didn't make the cut, believe it or not. They didn't make it on the show. They wanted it to be more kind of organic and, you know, they didn't want this kind of star power in there. But when they first asked them, kind of interviewed them, they said, wouldn't you love to start over again like Glenn's doing? Wouldn't that be something? And they both said, heck no. Like, why in the world would he want to do that? Like, what's the upside? Mm-hmm. I mean, A, if he does it, which I doubt he will, because 90 days to build a $1 million business with only $100.
Wow.
If he does it, what barrier, you know, I don't think he's gonna, but more than likely he's gonna fail in front of the world. I would never want to do that. Mm-hmm. There's no real upside. And I'm sitting there thinking, gosh, I mean, I think it'd be kind of fun to see if I could do it. I think I can do it.
It's a great
Why
challenge.
Not? It's a great challenge. But halfway through the show, I realized 100% that I will not make it. I am going to fail. And what came of that was the realization that it's not so much that I'm going to fail. I have stumbled and fallen before, but the whole world is going to see this. And not even that that got me. My children are going to see that Dad failed, that Dad might have been lucky at that first business, but he can't do it again. And all of a sudden, it became very apparent, I need to pull the plug. I need to quit. I need to run and hide because I am not going to risk my reputation and everything I built in my life to show the world that I'm just a loser and I can't do it. So that was in my mind. And why I mean I'm proud is because what happens in real life is we all have the devil on our shoulders saying, this is harder than you thought. This is not what you signed up for. This is something that is going to 100% fail. You need to leave now, pull the plug, get out. We all have that. And it's the fact that you have to, if you're an entrepreneur, you cannot listen to that. You have to go through the pain and keep on driving through and have that positive voice win. And I sat there going, I'm going to fail. And this isn't about making a business. This isn't about my reputation. This is about my children. In other words, there's always ways to convince yourself it's okay to fail. Mm. And at that last second when I was going to pull the plug, did I realize I have never, ever given up on anything in my life. I've always pushed through the pain. And then this time especially, I'm going to continue, even though I know I can't make it, because I'm going to show my children that you don't give up and that you have integrity and you push through no matter what. So that's what I did. And by the grace of God, somehow, I absolutely, you know, did it. I don't know how that happened, But that's what happens again in real life. You think it's gonna be over, you convince yourself not to go on, and that's why I'm proud, because you have to not listen to those negative voices. And so, to me again, it wasn't about being a silly show. It was about my own internal dialogue and realizing that I have to keep going no matter what. And so I'm proud of that.
Oh man, absolutely. I'll be honest, the first time that I saw it, the show, I was like, wow. Not only did I learn a lot of the neat kind of like business things, like how you made relationships, connections, and you had a goal in mind, but just the challenges that you hit during that time, I saw that you overcame it. And it looked like you were not just the wealthy, but you came down to honestly, just like the normal person level, like $100, cell phone with no contact. You couldn't even use your name.
Right.
And you're just figuring out things. And I thought that was very just inspiring, to be honest with you.
Well, and what I learned the most was the average person out there that's living paycheck to paycheck, it is so difficult to go from surviving to thriving. That break is very, very hard. And you have to surround yourself with balcony people, people lifting you up, people giving you ideas, and get out of the basement. Don't surround yourself with those people. We all know who they are, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're the ones that are gonna hold you down, and they're gonna tell you it's okay to give up and quit. You can't, you gotta keep pushing through. And when you do that, you can just every now and then get a little break, and a little break turns into a bigger break and can turn into a bigger break. And then you get out of that mode. And that's what happened to me on that show was, you know, I couldn't figure out how to get from 100 to 1,000, you know. And once I got there, you know, and I learned, I got there because I learned something from my young son. You know, when I was, one time I saw my son, he was at a wedding, he was surrounded by a bunch of adults, and I walked over, I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Dad, I'm selling rocks." I said, "You're selling rocks?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "These drunk people, they'll buy anything." I'm like, holy cow. So, you know, I had $100 and ended up with $45 because I had to find a place to sleep. I slept in my truck, but I ended up finding a place. So I had $45 left, and it was St. Patty's Day coming up. So I bought a bunch of green swag, and I started selling them to drunk people, you know? And, you know, I mean, listening to my son, went out to the parade, went to the bars, get the little flashy green stuff, got it at the dollar store, you know? Turned around, made some money, ran back to the dollar store, did it again, and did it all night until I ended up with, you know, enough to go buy a car. Took the car and flipped it. Took another car and flipped it, you know, and just kept working my way up.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that time whenever you got down to $45 and you went all in on that green.
Yeah.
You know, everything green. I was like, man, he went all in. That's what an entrepreneur does. They have some risk tolerance, and you just got to be willing to do it and believe.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't mind, you shared something with me that, and I don't know if a lot of people know this behind the scenes, I know that you had had cancer and
right.
You overcame it. You're going to be on the show, and then you got it again, right?
Right.
So they postponed it a year.
Right.
And then out of all, even just, I mean, just the challenge you were on, making $1 million business in 90 days is just impressive enough. But what a lot of people don't know is that you was worried you was going to get sick during the show too. I know you said something about with ramen noodles or something.
Yeah. No, what happened was the second time the cancer came on my epiglottis, and that's the little flap that covers your windpipe when you swallow. Mm-hmm. They cut mine off. Mm-hmm. So now I have an open windpipe. So when I would eat, if I did, it would fall into my lungs and cause what they called aspiration pneumonia. Mm. And I'd be sick for 4 or 5 days in the hospital. That first year, I didn't do the show. The first year I was in the hospital 8 times for about 5 days each time with aspiration pneumonia. And so finally I did the show. In the show, it looks like I went for about 2 hours to the hospital. It was actually 4 or 5 days. I don't remember now, 3 or 4 days. And because I tried to eat the ramen noodles, and it caused me to aspirate. And so from then on, I didn't eat. I took shakes, and I ate them. I ate out of a feeding tube, and no one knew that. I mean, here I go. I open a restaurant, and I don't even eat, you know. But we didn't tell the public. We didn't tell the people that were helping me, because I did not want it to be about poor Glenn, let's help out. Because most people don't have, you know, it's not about an excuse. I didn't want it to be. It was about, look, we're in here trying to show people how you can, you know, have your own goals and achieve them and be an entrepreneur, right? And so it's not about falling back on people feeling sorry for you or giving you things when you normally wouldn't get them. So I didn't tell anybody that I didn't eat. I didn't, you know, what the crew would do is they would, you know, we'd be having some reality TV like this, let's say, and then when there was a small break, they'd go, hey, Glenn, you got a phone call. And I'd get up and I'd leave and I'd go in the car where no one could see me, and I would eat my two shakes, and then I'd come back in and off we'd go again, you know? So I did that for the 90 days. And when I did that, because in the beginning I was eating, trying to eat, and I would hold kind of, but you can't really close your windpipe, but I would try and my, you know, I would could eat myself. But after those 90 days of not eating, my esophagus kind of atrophied, and I don't eat anymore. I just take the shakes from now on.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, because like I said, on the show, just the challenge alone is tough enough. But then getting to know you in person, hearing all these stories, it just meant every time I go through something tough, I said, no, you just got to have good integrity, good perseverance.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, everybody's got their thing. They've got something that has happened in their life, and we've all got it. We can all make an excuse about it, right?
Yes.
Or you lean into it, okay? Mm. I've become the cook in our house. If I'm not going to eat, all right, I don't want to sit in my room, and I don't want to sit watching TV. I want to be involved. Mm-hmm. So why not be the chef? So I go and I cook for the family. I cook for my friends. I make them take me to lunches and breakfasts and dinners because I want to be involved. It's a social event.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I figured why not be a, you know, the best way to break bread in my case then is to make it, mm-hmm. right, if I can't eat it. And again, you can be the victim or the victor, right? It's up to you. It's all in your mind. And again, we've all got excuses we can make for why we can't achieve our goals. And they're all a bunch of BS, you know? You've got to get over it, you know, no matter what you have. Because I could come up with 10 of mine that maybe match or beat yours too. Mm-hmm. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, a lot of reasons to quit, but you just gotta
right.
move forward. Wow. So can you tell us about your new book, Integrity?
Sure. So I was not gonna write a book. I thought, you know, I've had so many people always say, oh, Glenn, you have so many stories, you should write a book. And I said, you know, I don't wanna start believing my own BS, right? So I just kept saying no. But because of that show, I did this show for my children. I wanted them to see dad fighting hard, working through the pain, and doing everything that ended up happening. What I didn't want was especially my two young children to remember the sick dad that had been through the cancer. And I mean, that's all okay, but mm-hmm. I wanted them to understand that life is hard and you gotta work hard. So that's why I did the show, right? What I did not expect was the tens of thousands of people around the world that contacted me. I mean, people in China, they'd be on the video, I'm doing the 90-day challenge, Glenn, right? And people in Bora Bora, everywhere, the United States, so many people, oh my gosh, you know, I had someone just, I mean, so many, but the other day, my wife and I were very fortunate to get this humanitarian award, and a gentleman walked up to me and started crying. And he said, "You have changed my life. Thank you. I did not think I could do my own business. And after watching you, I said, I'm going to try." And he said, "You know," and I've heard that so many times. And what I'm saying is, you know, I don't want to take myself that serious that I'm all that. Well, what I do realize is I'm just an average guy. And so if I can help other people realize their dreams, why not? So I wrote the book to show, hey, for A, I got a lot of crap as well. I've had a lot of struggles and all those things. And you do too, I'm sure. But guess what? If you want to achieve your dreams and you want to have a life better than you could have ever dreamed, then you've got to go for it. You've got to really try. And you've got to surround yourself with great people. And you have to have integrity. So.
Oh, that's amazing. It's a great story. And it's been a bestseller too.
Yeah, it was. It did really well. So I'm proud of it.
Are you still doing more book tours too in the United States?
Not really. I did every now and then, but you know, it's okay. I you know, you do things and you move on, you know. I mean, I like it, but you know, I'm just keep moving on.
Oh, absolutely. So I want to go back to your mortgage business. I know you did Stearns Lending.
Right.
And then I know you later sold that. What year did you sell that?
I sold that maybe 10 years ago, about 2014 or so. I can't remember.
Yeah, and you told me about how it felt when you did sell it and can you tell us how you felt
sure.
when you sold it?
You think about building a business for 25 years and finally there's somebody there that's going to validate you did something right. Mm-hmm. Should be the happiest day in your life.
You would think, yeah.
You'd think.
Yeah.
Saddest day of my life. I cried like a baby. I realized, you know, I sold because of fear. I was sick with cancer, didn't know if I'd make it. 2018 and 17 were the hardest years, the financial crisis, and will it happen again? I'm number one in the country. Will it all go away? Will I die with this cancer? Let me sell. I sold for the wrong reason because I loved my business. And so when I sold, I realized literally I was a sellout, okay? Because it's not about money. And I was very disappointed in myself, sad. I was not in a good frame of mind. And so when I didn't die, when cancer kind of, you know, we got past that, I did the show. That gave me an opportunity right at the same time where I didn't have I had a non-compete that expired. So I said, why not go and do it again? Like the show showed me, I really enjoyed building. I really loved, you know, gathering a group of people saying, let's charge the mountain together. And so I want to do it again. And so we started Kind Lending.
Now, can you tell us a little bit more about Kind Lending? You started in 2020, right?
Yeah, 2019.
2019.
I had an opportunity to restart and, you know, look, the Wall Street private equity world, what they do very, very well. If you are an entrepreneur and you have your own business that is a family to you, those two worlds are very opposite, right? Mm-hmm. What they do as Wall Street, I'm lumping everybody together, which is wrong, but is
in general,
is they're there to make money. Mm-hmm. When you have your own business, a lot of times that is not the only currency, right? There's a lot of other things, happiness and, you know, taking kindness. And there's a lot of other things that you trade in your life. And so when I saw this influence that came in, not just with my company, but a lot of companies right about the same time, there was a wave of private equity that came through because they were very smart in realizing the non-banker, the independent mortgage banker, but not a mm-hmm. real bank like Bank of America, Wells Fargo. They were going to start to dominate. So in comes the Wall Street money. And what it did is it changed the way we did business. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm going to give you a $100,000 signing bonus, but you're going to have to stay with me 2 years. Okay? Those 2 years, if you leave, I'm going to sue you because you took my money, right? Well, what we always did is we didn't give the big bonuses. If you wanted to earn that, you could earn it through you as you grew. Mm. And if you leave, not shame on you, but shame on me. Shame on me and our company. Why couldn't we figure out how to keep you happy? And that mentality, that servant leadership, is a way that we were able to keep people from the first employees we ever had. My receptionist has been with me 26 years.
Wow.
My assistant's been with me 27 years. Our president over 20 years. Underwriters, funders, all our managers 15, 20 years. Why? Because money isn't the only currency, right? And so when I came back in and I noticed this, again, this difference in I will give you a lot of money up front, and then I own you. I don't care if I have bad pricing. I don't care if I don't treat you well. I don't, right? We said, no, we're coming in as kind lending. We're here to help make your life better and easier. And if we don't, you should leave. If we don't, shame on us. And so, you know, we came in and it's working. Obviously, we went from 2% market share among reporting lenders. It's not all the lenders, and it's not the two biggest, but among all the other reporting lenders, we had 2% market share 2 years ago. We have 22% market share today.
Wow.
So, you know, we were hitting 30 week over week. We go up and down a little bit, but basically, you know, we've been just taking share and growing. We had our best month ever in January. We had our best month ever in January. We then beat that in February, and we're off to an even better March. So, you know, doing something right when a lot of the companies are still struggling out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. What's interesting is you're saying it's more relationship than transactional with your team. And I think that's amazing because I'm still kind of new. I'm used to working as a solo real estate investor. And it's definitely interesting bringing on team and just trying to make sure that I'm there for them. And that's actually what I was telling Tim, is that I want to make sure that if I can help them make it in life and them be happy and them grow, that'll help the company grow in general, not just talk about money all the time and stuff.
You know, it's funny, when I was in college, it was when I was in college, I loved this writings by Thomas Paine. It was called The Invisible Hand Theory, right? Mm. And what it was about was when you look at a government that will allow a person or a business to grow and reward people for their efforts and for their sacrifice and risk. Mm. And if you allow people to, you know, thrive, they'll make money, and in turn, through taxes and other things, the country will grow, right?
Makes
sense. The invisible hand is allowing businesses to push up and strengthen a country by it excelling through business, right?
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is true with individuals. If you celebrate individuals and help them grow, and you find ways to replace yourself and get other people under you and want them to thrive, then you will grow as well. Your business will grow, right? And what a lot of people do is, if they're maybe a team lead, they hire weaker people than them because they're afraid those people will outshine them. Mm. And then all you have is a weak division or a weak team. But if you are confident enough that you hire the best and strongest people around you, then they will make you look better because your whole team will grow or your whole company will grow, right? So always try to find better, stronger people and surround yourself with those people, and you are going to always look better. You know, even though it doesn't feel that way when you think, oh, they're going to expose that I'm not that smart. 2.1 grade point average, failed fourth grade, dyslexic. Hey, people out there in the mortgage world think I'm kind of smart. I'm not that smart. I've just got a lot of smart people around me, you know.
Yeah, you have a great team with a good relationship.
Right.
That's inspiring. Man. So now I just want to talk to you about kind of you and your family. So you've been married to Mindy, and I know she's a great woman. How did you and Mindy meet? And
yeah, you know, I was, I had been married once before, and a lot of times you'll find that being an entrepreneur can play havoc on your family. Mm-hmm. Because when you start, a lot of times we tend to be very myopic, where we focus only on one thing. And in focusing on business and ignoring some of the other areas of your life can cause some problems. And in my life, that caused me my first marriage, right? I then ended up single with a company doing really well. And I had a lot of opportunity out there. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was a pretty lonely place to have what felt like people want to be around you for the wrong reason. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a good spot for me. So I finally got to a place where I said, I'm not going to look for the most attractive woman. I'm not going to look. I'm just going to enjoy myself. And I went to Las Vegas because I had a little television production company. I was out there at the end of the night. I was at the blackjack tables having a wonderful time and hooting and hollering. And the gal next to the next table over says, you need to pipe down because we're the party table. You're not the party table. And I said, she says, either pipe down or you take your party over to our table. Okay. I took it over to her table. Beautiful girl. She was with her friends. We had a wonderful time. But again, I was over it. You know, didn't get her name or number, stayed, had a wonderful time, and I left. And I went home, and a couple of days later, I'm watching the news. I'm thinking, wow, there's the girl that I was sitting next to. She's on the news. She's an actual news reporter. So I went online, and I found her name, and I emailed the news station, passed this on to Mindy Burbano. Hey, if you're the girl I was sitting next to at a great time, call me. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So I then looked up again. I saw the phone number, viewer mail. That's it. I didn't have her number. Her name is like, I said, hey, could you pass this on to Mindy Burbano? Hey, if you're the girl I was sitting next to, you look just like her. I said, give me a call. I've got tickets to Jimmy Buffett. I got 150 tickets. Mm-hmm. And so she says, she calls me back. Hey, can I take a friend? I said, yeah, come on down. And that's how I kind of got to meet her, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we ended up a year later getting married. And my ex-wife was there. My ex-wife has become a very dear friend of ours, you know, so.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So just like in your business world, you're able to maintain relationships even with
three. It's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. So also another thing, so I met your sons. Great, you have great kids, by the way, your sons and daughters. But you told me some really neat stories, too, about, because everything that you know, showed on the show, in your book, and then just like your philosophy in life, you told me some stories, one of the stories, and I hope you don't mind to share that, about, I think your son, he wanted to go to New York, and you were trying to, and I just thought it was real neat how you taught him kind of like hard love that he has to earn it and work
right.
for. Even though you have all these great things, you wanted him to learn that he's got to work for
right.
it. And I something about cutting grass and stuff.
Yeah, he came to, it was eighth grade, mm-hmm. and he came to Mindy and myself and says, Dad, I really want to go to New York with my class. Can I go? Mm-hmm. He says, it's $2,500. I said, absolutely. I mean, this would be wonderful for you to go, son. As a matter of fact, we're even willing to pay half. how am I going to come up with $1,250? I said, you got to figure it out, son. I mean, it's September. You're not going to May. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, let's figure out how to get a job and make it happen. So we talked for a while, and finally I thought, you know, I wonder what I pay the gardeners to cut the grass. Maybe you could do that. And he says, yeah, maybe I could. So I find out I paid them $50 every time they mowed the grass. So he says, yeah, could I do that? I said, sure. So of course I got to go buy a $1,250 lawnmower because I don't even have a lawnmower. And didn't tell him that though. And so the first day he cuts the grass, I'm at work. Hey dad, cut the grass. I said, great son, don't move. I drive all the way home. I walk the grass with him. You missed the spot. Son, if you're doing a job, you do it right. Next time, if you do it wrong, you're taking 10 off. The next time I'll take $20 off. I said, pretty soon you'll be cutting the grass for free. Do a job, do it right. He must have thought I was such a jerk. About 4 days later, I get a call, dad, cut the grass again. I guess it grows pretty fast in California, or he wants to get paid, you know, quick. And don't move. I drive home again. I walk the grass with him. Congratulations, son, great job. So he does this throughout the year, and he ends up, now he had to keep $100 in his account. That's the deal. He ends up with $500 extra in his account.
Wow.
It's a couple days before he's supposed to go, and he goes and buys himself a PlayStation or Nintendo or whatever they were, and he's got the money. What he didn't think about was the tax. So now he's like $45 short, and it's the day before. He says, dad, you know, I bought this Nintendo. I have all the money. I actually got everything, but I don't have my $100 cushion. I'm short about $45. I said, well, son, you can't go. I said, a deal's a deal. We made a deal. But dad, I mean, I said, no, a deal's a deal. He says, well, I can still cut the grass. I'll do it now. I said, then cut the grass. And so he cuts the grass and he comes in. And he's just heartbroken. He says, dad, it's dark. I couldn't finish. Son, I'm sorry you can't go. I said, we made a deal. I'm sorry. My wife and my daughter look at you. Man, you are heartless. I said, we made a deal. He goes downstairs. I walk downstairs, go in the drawer, go get the flashlight. Come with me, son. I walked that yard with him with the flashlight. He cut the rest of the grass. The neighbors must have thought we were crazy. And I said, son, congratulations. Good job. He went on, went to New York and did his thing. And he went on to go to a private ninth grade, and they asked him to write an essay on what he's most proud of. He said, I'm most proud that I paid my way. Now, my lawyer had written a book called Entitled Mania, and he has one great part in there. He talks about, for everything we give our children, we take something away. And so, you know, to just say it'd be okay, he would not have been as proud of working and doing the right thing in order to have gotten to that place. So, you know, he earned it, he's proud of it, and you shouldn't take that away from people.
I think that was a great thing that he learned. And yeah. I guess he carried that on in his life for
he
sure.
Yeah, he's a very well-adjusted young man, you know.
Yeah. So recently you invited me to go on Richard Branson's island, and you did a really great event, just really based around your book, too, Integrity. We got to meet some of the people on the foundation. What was that? What's it called? Where Andrew and all them spoke, Horace? What's that foundation?
Horatio Alger.
Oh, Horatio Alger.
The Horatio Alger, yes.
Yeah, and I think that was a great event. And we got to meet Richard Branson and everything. So how did you go to meeting Richard for the first time?
There was an event at EO, the Entrepreneur Organization, and they didn't have enough money and they wanted Richard Branson really bad. And I'm not part of the organization, but I wanted to help these young entrepreneurs. So I helped fund the event for them. And Richard had said he wanted to meet the person that funded it. So he ended up having, he came over to my house for dinner. And we had dinner, got to meet him, got to see his real character. He's a really neat guy and a real interesting, funny story. It was about 1 a.m. when dinner ended. And we had some wine and, you know, Richard was a little looser than normal. And when we left, I walked him to his car and there was a man, a driver. He gets out big eyed and he says, "Mr. Branson, I must have left the lights on. And I'm really sorry, but the car won't start." And I immediately look at Richard and I'm thinking, what does Mr. Cool do when things aren't going his way and he's had a couple drinks, right? And I felt like the Matrix, like I'm going around him looking for a tick or a sigh, or is he gonna ream the kid out? Mm-hmm. What does he do? And he sits there, he gets the information. Basically, you're screwed, you gotta stay here for a while, right? The young man delivers the information. Immediately, Richard turns to me and he goes, "Looks like we need another bottle of wine." You know, he didn't miss a beat. And he did not make that young man feel bad for what happened. What good would that do, right?
Yeah.
We went back in, had another couple of drinks and laughs, and the doorbell rings. He says, "Looks like it's time to go." And we went, and he went on his way. And that really impressed me about him. And that's how we originally met. Then he invited us to a few things of his, and then we started going to Necker, and then we started hanging out, and then he and I bought an island together with a couple other people, and you know, we just got to be good friends. You know, he's a wonderful guy, a great mentor, a great guy that understands relationships are important.
Yeah, man, he's a hardworking guy too.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's another thing too, like, and I travel, and I'm a very big believer in mentors, and I love to follow along all the gurus or all the other entrepreneurs I can, but I admire you very much. I talk to a lot of people. Even before I met you and I watched Undercover Billionaire, I shared with everyone, you got to watch Undercover Billionaire. It's not just you learn something, but just this guy, Glenn, it's just, he's the real deal, not just in business, but just integrity, basically what you said. And there's a story that just really hit me even harder that you told me one time that you was walking. And I'm sorry if I'm getting you to share all
no,
your stories.
Cool.
To me, I learned so much from this, just beyond that.
I love it. I'm like, okay, I wonder what I told you. Keep going.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so you was walking, and I think there was someone singing, and I guess you was trying to go behind the stage, and a guy stopped you.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll let you tell the story since you know what it is.
So, you know, well, I'll tell you the story and then I'll tell you the lesson, I guess, that I got out of it. Was, yeah, we were at a concert in a big arena. And, you know, usually you can go around the outside and they got the hot dogs and beers and everything. And you can walk all the way around. We were walking and this first act came on and it was people that Mindy and I knew. So we weren't at the right place that we would go down, you know. But we ran and went to look. Oh, they're starting. And the guy that was checking tickets says, "Can I see your ticket, please?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm looking." I said, "Yeah," and I show it to him. I goes, "Oh, you're down 5 more, you know, halls down. You gotta move, sir." I said, "I know. Okay, hang on, sir. I need to watch this. You need to move. We gotta get you out of here. We gotta go. This is not your aisle." And I said something really rude to him, right? Like, "Yeah, are you serious? Like, you can't even let me sit here for a second," or something very rude out of frustration. And then we turned around and we left and we walked and we were going down around the arena. And I said to Mindy, I said, "Hang on, I'll be right back." I ran all the way back and I walked up to that young man and I say, "Sir," I said, "I just want to tell you something." I said, "I was a jerk. I'm very sorry. for that response. I go, it wasn't you, you're doing your job. I'm sorry. And I start to leave, he goes, Glenn. And I turn around, I'm thinking, I don't remember giving him my name. Mm. He goes, Glenn, he goes, I know who you are. He goes, I looked up to you, really did. He goes, and when that interaction just happened, I was so disappointed, thinking, wow, not who I thought he was. By you coming back, he goes, you're absolutely who I thought you were. I'm really appreciative that you would do that. And, you know, it's not about thinking people are watching you because they know who you are. It's who you are when no one's watching or when you think it doesn't matter. It always matters, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I didn't know that young man knew who I was. And I did not think about that, right? It was all owning the fact that we're imperfect people. We all are. Mm-hmm. No one's perfect. We all have flaws. And it's what you do when you do have, like I said, my ex-wife traveled the world with us and taught our young kids and is the godmother to our kids. Life is not perfect. What do we do when we trip, fall, when we're a jerk, whatever the case may be? What do we do then, right? And I think that's more, of course, we've got to keep trying to be better people. We have to. But we're gonna trip and fall. And then it's a matter of how you handle it after you've screwed it up, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. What are your 3 to 5 years goals, like personally and in business right now?
You know, I like, in business, I really love growing. I love, you know, what we're doing and changing the industry. We had a chief kindness officer. People are calling me, Glenn, our competitor just put a chief kindness officer in place. Like, do you want to do a cease and desist? Like, it's a compliment. We're in here to change this industry. Mm-hmm. That's why we called it kind lending. I want all of our competitors to stop suing their employees, but instead saying, we've got to do better to retain the employees. I want to change the industry for the good. And if they're going to sit and copy us, good for them. And good for them. That means we're doing stuff right. So, you know, I want to change the industry. I would love to continue to grow. I enjoy it. It's a game. It's fun to build and have our teammates proud of, you know, market share growth and all those kind of things. So, and I don't have an exit strategy. You know, my wife says it's in a pine box, right? Because I love what I do. You know, I'm not here to build it and sell it. That's not what I want to do. I don't want to go public. I like what we do. And then personally, I really enjoyed our times when we ran around the world. I enjoyed our times when we got to meet people and see other places and discover, you know, just little hideaways in different parts of the world. I love that. So I want to go travel more again. I want to, you know, I want to spend more time again with the family doing things like that. So I want to basically get that balance because I like that and that discovery of, you know, the world. And I want to build at the same time. So.
Mm-hmm. And now I think I know the answer to this question, but because you shared it with us earlier, but was there a certain moment where you came closest to giving up, not in the show, but in just like in your entire business career?
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've, mm-hmm. Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm gonna sit in.
Come on in, come join
Shane,
us.
Hey. Is this a continuous thing?
Yeah, it is. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you,
honey.
Aww. This is Tim, by the way.
Hi, Tim. Nice to meet you. I've heard your story before.
Yeah.
So how much longer are you guys going to be?
I think this is it almost right here.
You're at 59 minutes right now.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I sit here and listen?
No, when did I want to give it up the most?
What?
I've had so many times.
What
business.
Was one moment that he just came closest to giving up? What? And earlier when we were doing the house, where he talked about the 2008, 2010 or the credit lines and, you know, or, you know, the mentors coming to talk.
Yeah. So I'll give you I'll tell you one time that I came to almost losing it all. I've had 100, okay? But in 2008, I received a call from Credit Suisse, and they had our warehouse credit facility. And the gentleman, Bruce Kaiserman, calls me. He says, "Hey, Glenn, party's over." I said, "Party's over? What's that mean?" He says, "We are getting out of the warehouse line business." He goes, "The walls are crumbling in Wall Street here, and we have 93 relationships in warehouse, and we're done. We're just keeping a handful. We're getting out. This is too tough times." And I said, "Wow." I said, "When do you plan on getting out?" He says, "2 weeks. You got 2 weeks." I said, "You're going to put us out of business. 100%. Mm-hmm. He goes, "I'm very sorry, but this is not my problem." He goes, "This is the toughest times we've ever seen in the history of our business, and we're getting out." And I'm like, wow. That was a Thursday. Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. New York time. Mm-hmm. Remember, California, he's New York. Wow. I called Bruce. I said, "Bruce." "Yeah, Glenn." I said, "I thought about what you said. 93 relationships, you're done, just keep a handful, you're out." I go, can I talk to you about that handful?" "Okay." I said, "Well, I'd like to look you in the eye, Bruce." He says, "Okay." He says, "Now you're in California, I'm in New York, this before Zoom, you know." Mm-hmm. "And how do you want to do that?" I said, "Well, Bruce, I flew all night. I go, I'm in your lobby downstairs. So if you don't mind, I'd like to talk to you." "Oh my God, come on up." So Bruce kept us and Quicken, the only two now rocket companies, let go of all the other companies.
So two out of the 93, and you were one of those.
Yeah. And so, there's so many times an entrepreneur will come within a minute of going under, right? And they've got to do those things that are above and beyond, right? And when I think about starting Kind Lending, I don't have the same motivation, meaning I want to see if I can build a business because I've never done it before. I've already done it. And I have a bunch of money, and I could go float around the world, and I could do things. So the draw is going, it's getting hard. Why do you want to do that again? Right? Like there's competing things in my life that tell me, don't work so hard. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do this now. And what happened? The worst 3 years in the history of mortgage banking have been the last 3 years ever, ever. Wow. And I'm in the middle of it going, why am I doing this again? I don't have to do this. Why in the world would I do this? This makes no sense. Mm-hmm. I could sit on a beach every day. I could just go fishing. Why would I want to do this? And just like the show, just like being an entrepreneur, just like anything else, don't do it. Quit. Go. You don't have to do it this time. Spend the time with your family. Do other things. And I sat there once again and said, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to quit. And I thought of every reason. I could merge it with this other. And I just said, no. And that 2% went to 5%, went to 10%, went to 20% market share, because we just did not give up. And that is the story of every entrepreneur. Do not give up, period.
That's amazing. Glenn, I appreciate you taking time to do this with us. Can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Sure. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and X, all at Glenn Stearns, GLENNSTEARNS.com. Also my website, but Glenn Stearns, you can find me anywhere. So.
Awesome. You guys make sure to go like and follow Glenn and buy his new book, Integrity. And Glenn, again, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Shane.
Thank you.